This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit this week with 99-year-old Leonard Lonergan of Falls City, Oregon. Originally from Grants Pass, he completed 35 missions as a B-24 navigator with the 453rd Bomb Group during World War II. We heard Leonard explain how the extreme altitude affected him in that non-pressurized bomber on his first mission, but it wasn't just thin air, extremely cold air too, right?
We have a heated suit that we plug in, yeah. Yeah, I've had missions that we've flown on in the wintertime so cold that I'd be working and perspiring, wipe the brow of my head, and be ice on my head. So that's cold.
And why don't we explain for people who've never been inside a B-24 where a navigator is, what some of your duties are, and how many men total are on that crew of your B-24?
Okay, there are 10 of us on a 24. I always went in over the nose wheel, so I was the first guy in the plane, in the nose. And then there was a kind of a little passageway on one side that the bombardier came in and the nose gunner came in, got in their place. Since it took close to 2 hours to everybody get up and to fly up to 20,000 feet and make a formation, the bombardier always took a nap there. And then as we got up to altitude, I'd wake him up and we'd have our social time. So there's the three of us, the nose gunner, and he's in his own compartment. Poor guy is there all alone. And that's a guy that I really, really didn't envy, because every place you go, every shot that's fired at him, everyone is right in front of him. He's the first guy to see it. In fact, we lost our nose gunner. He couldn't take it anymore and finally had to give up. And we had to replace him. Then we have the pilot and the co-pilot, the radio operator and the engineer. That's seven. Then back of the bomb bay in the waist is the right waist and the left waist gunner. And then in the back end is the tail gunner.
How well did you get to know all those guys?
After the war, quite a bit. We became real good friends with them. During the war, we didn't associate.
Just the officers is who you knew.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And your role from start to finish on a mission as the navigator?
Pay attention. Notice whatever's happening. I mean, keep your eyes out. Take a note of everything that you see that could be a problem or needs to change. Be prepared that if you're coming back as the pilot of the crew alone, that you know what you're doing.
And you're with the 453rd Bomb Group out of Old Buckingham, England.
Right.
Which squadron were you in?
734th.
Now, one of the things I remember about the 453rd from talking to other veterans who served in that bomb group was there was somebody pretty well known who was associated with that bomb group. And some people don't know. They know him for other reasons, but not for what he did in the war, which was pretty significant. You crossed paths with Jimmy Stewart?
Yeah. He was very highly respected there because Jimmy Stewart was in a lot of missions. I always thought he was the pilot. I understand he was the co-pilot. But Jimmy Stewart never ducked away from missions. And we always kind of felt proud to be in a group that had a guy like Jimmy Stewart in it. As I say, we flew our first mission on the 31st of July. He moved the next day and had got one promotion. Then he came back occasionally and had lunch with the guys.
I was going to say he must have been threatened by your movie star good looks and thought he had competition.
Probably was.
Yeah. and you know, for those of us who weren't born yet, we know Jimmy Stewart now, and we think of all his famous movies, and It's a Wonderful Life, and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and you could list a whole bunch of them. But even at the time, here in 1944, he's a really big name.
He's a big name, yeah.
Can you imagine one of those high-paid Hollywood stars going to war today?
Unreal.
Well, you told me about your first mission, and you spent half of it throwing up. And
we're not that much time.
You wouldn't be here if it was that long, huh? Did it get easier after that?
It's a matter of all of a sudden we got educated that this is what's happening. I mean, this is what we're going to do, and we better do it pretty good, or we could be in trouble.
And you hinted at something before, that when it comes to a navigator, if you're flying in formation, it's really the lead plane that's going to dictate what everybody else is doing.
Correct.
But if things go haywire, all of a sudden you've got a heavy responsibility on your shoulders. Is that something that you thought about, prepared for, considered every time you went up?
I don't know as you prepare for it. It's amazing to drop your bombs amidst a sky that is just completely black with gunpowder, come out of the powder, see that you've got an engine missing, and realize that the other 36 planes have disappeared.
You lived that.
That's an exciting time, yes. The town was Dessau, Germany, which is about 100 miles south and west of Berlin.
I'd love to hear more about that mission. Sounds pretty right. Memorable.
I guess I should go from the start. When we have our meetings, we had a sign that says, to be forewarned is to be forearmed. So this mission, we are to fly into Germany, and visibility is great. Down some trees, and then we're going to come into railroad tracks that run about 10 miles into Dessau. And all we have to do is just follow those train tracks. It'll take us right to the target, drop our bombs, and come home. No problem. When we got to the tracks, we found that the Germans had covered them with flat cars filled with 88-millimeter guns.
Mm.
By the time we got over Dessau, it was just unbelievably black. When we come out, and I'm alone, I did have an urge, but it had to do with Mother. I thought maybe I could use some help. At any rate, now the thing is, keep them away from any cities. This, from here in Germany, still controls all the way to the coast from there. We've had our D-Day, and we're down in France inspecting, but where we're coming in is all German territory.
Mm-hmm.
So we're on our way home, and I have pretty much avoided any centers where there's people. And long, long away, with visibility so good, a gunman on the coast spots us, and he sends up a puff, just kind of a greeting. And that's fine. And we go for a little bit further and maybe adjust and another puff. And we can't go north because it is populated in Holland. It would be very dangerous. We couldn't go across the North Sea. Need to cross the channel. We can't go south because that part is still held by the Germans. So we're going on, and in front of us, right in front of us, is a puff. I would say 15 seconds before the next one. In that time, a P-51 flew down and took out the gun, and we come home very easily across the channel, no problem.
Mm.
Interesting thing, the bombardier and co-pilot and I walked the 2 or 3 miles to the train depot. The nice thing about the trains in England, they ran about every 15 minutes. It would take us up to Norwich, and we'd go to the Red Cross and have tea and cakes, mm-hmm. or mainly cookies. At any rate, we did that. And while we were there, there was this fighter pilot with a bush down cap and all, and he was describing the day he had had about taking out a gun that was going to shoot down this B-24 that was crowd coming in. So we got to at least thank him for saving our necks.
What are the odds of that?
I don't know.
And just to be clear, so when you say you're coming to the target, you don't realize the target has all these anti-aircraft defenses. It puts up a path of flak that you guys have to fly to. And when you emerge from that and can see again, there's no other planes around.
No, they're all gone.
Does that mean they were shot down or they left without you?
Well, I don't know. The only thing I can figure, if we have lost an engine, is we probably lost speed, and they have just gone beyond us.
And what would have happened to the 10 of you on that B-24 if that P-51 didn't show up?
I probably wouldn't be telling you about it, but it's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, surely he would have probably killed somebody. It depends on where it hit.
But then you walk in, and you hear him telling the story that you just lived.
Yeah. That was kind of fun.
He must have had quite a look on his face when you guys told him who you were.
I suppose.
When you go through something like that, does it have an effect on your mindset for the next mission?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't ever realize that we were scared. Concerned, yeah. But I don't know as we felt real scared. It was a job, mm-hmm. you know, that had to be done. And there would be a worse one.
So. Yeah. October 17th of 44?
Yeah.
What happened that day?
That's Cologne. The co-pilot watches the lead plane, and the lead bombardier first drops a smoke bomb. As soon as he drops that, our co-pilot says, bombs away. Our bombardier hits the button, which is right there beside us, and little four little lights go on, bing, 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 little green lights as for each steel. The Germans were pretty slick, and they realized what we were doing, so they developed a bomb that would come as a smoke bomb. so that we would drop our bombs someplace other than the factory that we're aiming for. So on Cologne, as we're making this run, the All co-pilot right. says, bombs away. The pilot immediately says, false German bomb. The bombardier just barely flicks the thing, and one light comes on, left front bomb. So left front bomb gone, the other three are still there. About 15 seconds later, an 88 millimeter comes up through the top of the plane and explodes above us. No harm, particularly, except it went through the main gas line.
Oof.
So now we reek with gasoline. We leave the bombay doors open. I don't know if he opens a nose door at that time or not, but we're slowed down. I mean, we're all alone and slowed down, and we're in Cologne. Now it's Brigham home again. So the engineer, I need to tell you about the engineer. We're at about 22,000 feet in October, so it's probably 10, 15 degrees below zero. And Eddie's standing on this little walk. Have you been in the Nairobi 24 that has a walk for Bombay? He's standing on that thing.
Little catwalk in the Bombay?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
He's standing on that, trying to replace that hole in the gas line.
Mm.
And I understand that the gas got over the one eye and actually froze. It was so cold.
Holy moly.
Johnny Miller, the radio guy, is giving him stuff, tearing out stuff to try to stuff in the hole. I got him down about as far as Koblenz, and then I go 270 degrees. I'm going to go due west. Well, I mentioned we're at 20,000 feet or so, 22, and the pilot says, I've got to get down and see the ground. And they had a heavy, heavy cloud cover, which in a way was probably fortunate for us in a lot of ways. So he goes down through all of the cloud cover, and we come out about 1,000 feet above the ground, a ground that is covered with German tanks. We apparently come down over the Siegfried Line. Now, I learned something about the German tank people. They're not friendly. They start shooting at us. Fortunately, they were not good shots either because they didn't do us any damage. We went back up in the clouds, and maybe 5 minutes or 6 minutes more, he went down again. Then I got lucky. I recognized a Belgian flag, and I says, we're behind the lines, and he hit bail out. The navigator is the first guy out of the nose.
Mm-hmm.
The way to depart from the nose is get your shirt on, get it in the ball, and kind of dive out because you've got real limited space. Mm-hmm. You run the risk of getting your head cut off. So I haven't had my parachute on. So Tom gives me the chute, and immediately it goes on, and I sit down. Now I'm thinking, what am I supposed to do? I forgot and dropped my feet, and now I'm gone. And instead of getting the head top of my head off or falling or flying, I just go out flat on my back. And I can feel the two engines that are still turning a little bit, pull the chute, and it opens. And what a beautiful countryside. One of the things I learned then also at the meeting, don't look down. There's a reason for that. The ground is coming up like crazy. But it didn't take you long to get down. And then when I get down, I remember one of the things you do is in the wind, you spill your chute, and also it doesn't pull you. And so I tried that, but there was no wind. So there was no need to pull it. And suddenly, there's a bunch of ladies around me. I'm wanted. They want the parachute silk. So they take the silk, and they give us direction to where the officers are, or where the army is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a hotel, and it's a group of, what, maybe 80 or 100 people, and the captain, big old hotel, and there's a little tavern there and a home behind it. We walk down there, and the captain and I get together. In the same field I came down was the radio operator and one of the waste gunners. So I talked to the captain and tell him about the tanks and all, and it says, well, let's go see if we can find the plane. When the plane came down, I would say less than a minute from the time I hit the ground, the plane was down.
Mm-hmm.
So it had run out of gas. So we cut it pretty close.
I guess so. Yeah.
So we went to the airplane, and of course, there's not much there. The amazing thing was that one wheel was up, was still kind of spinning around. But there were a bunch of kids there, and we took about two or three sergeants with us, and they had to remove the 50 caliber shells from all the kids.
Oh, yeah.
And then pack the guns in, and I don't know whether they found the bombardier bomb site or not. But I was kind of interesting. The next day they gave us a driver and a little Jeep to take the four of us. There was another guy with us that wasn't with the crew that was supposed to deflect the flak. And we've always got shot up real bad every time one of those guys was with us. At any rate, so I didn't know who he was. But anyhow, they drove us to Brussels. The Brussels airfield was unbelievably bad. And there was an airplane with all the rest of the crew when we came in, except for the pilot. So we loaded in the plane and we took off for jolly England.
And the plane that you got shot down in was Lucky Penny 2?
Lucky Penny 2, yeah.
Uh-huh. So by your calculations, you wouldn't have been flying much longer had you not jumped when you did.
Oh, we wouldn't have had another minute and a half.
And how close to the lines were you?
They said we were 6 miles behind the lines. I think it was probably more like 8.
And had you ever bailed out of a plane before?
No, that's for there's paratroopers that do that.
Not navigators.
No.
He can laugh about it now, but those were some pretty intense moments in the skies over Germany. And I have a few more questions I want to pose for Mr. Lonergan when we come back. If you head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you'll find photos and a short video with this 99-year-old World War II veteran. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.